Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good morning,
Diarrhea!
It's time to wake up. It's 5, and we're live.
Oh, is this thing on? I don't care. I want him to hear.
This is the pregame show, your early morning shot of sports on 95.7 The Game.
Come on!
A .276 batting average, 28 home runs, 66 RBIs, 132 walks, 54 strikeouts, an on-base percentage of .480, and a slugging percentage of .565. That leads to an OPS of 1.045. You know what that is? That's the stats for one man named Barry Lamar Bonds at the age of 42 in his last season, and the man yet again didn't get voted into the Hall of Fame. Good morning, everybody. Stephen Lankford in with you on the pregame show on 95.7 The Game, leading you up until 6 o'clock. Coming up a little later on in the show, you're going to hear from 49ers fullback Kyle Juszczyk. He was on with Joe Lo and Dibs yesterday, and it's pretty cool to hear from him talk about the run game and just the confidence that they have in knowing that they can just run the ball down anyone's throat. So it was cool to hear from him yesterday. That'll be our interview of the day. That's coming up at 5:40, and I do have a question surrounding the 49ers that I want to get to coming up at 5:15, and I'll ask you that, and I need your input. Chilton Autobody text line 95795. As you know, I always like to read it off. You are my co-host, the Chilton Autobody text line. But the Hall of Fame announcement, the voting, was yesterday. And the only two that ended up getting higher than 75% of the vote was one Derek Jeter. Derek Jeter was one vote off from being a unanimous Hall of Famer. He would have been one of the only other ones with Mariano Rivera, also a fellow Yankee. But the other one was Larry Walker. Larry Walker, he got 76.6% of the votes. So you need, there are 397 total votes, total ballots, and you need 298 votes in order to be elected into the Baseball Hall of Fame. So we had Derek Jeter, Larry Walker, and that's it. Next up was Curt Schilling. He had 70%. Roger Clemens with 61%, and the man down all the way at number 5 on the voting this year was one Barry Bonds. Now, Schilling, Clemens, and Bonds are in their 8th year on the ballot. They got 2 more years of eligibility. Larry Walker was on his 10th. That's his final year of eligibility to be voted onto the Hall of Fame ballot. And I honestly, at this point, when it comes to who they vote into the Hall of Fame, looking down at this list of players, it's hard for me to really say that any of these guys. I'm such an easy person when it comes to the Hall of Fame. For me, if I'm looking at a player and I think back on watching him and remember that this player was dominant for season upon season, I'm looking at these guys right now, and for a majority of the time, a lot of these guys who were on the ballot ended up being pretty dominant. All that except for, I don't know, maybe Brad Penny and J.J. Putz. J.J. Putz for a little bit when he was the closer, but for the most part, these guys, whether it's Sammy Sosa, Andrew Jones, Jeff Kent, Manny Ramirez, Todd Helton, Gary Sheffield, Billy Wagner, Scott Rolen, Andy Pettit, Bobby Abreu, and the one other guy, Omar Vizquel. And Omar Vizquel gets a bad rap because he didn't exactly have the best statistics from the plate. But the man was just an icon with his glove from the 90s into the 2000s. And he, along with guys like Derek Jeter, were the shortstops that you knew and loved. And Derek Jeter, in a way, was kind of ahead of his time, because the shortstop used to be the kind of baseball player who wasn't really as tall, didn't weigh as much, didn't have that sort of huge athletic build, and they really weren't known for putting up offensive numbers. They were mostly known for being smaller guys that would play for a long time, would have terrific gloves, but really wouldn't be known for their bats. And Omar Vizquel lived up to that, but Derek Jeter was on the opposite end of the spectrum. He had an average glove at best, although one of the plays that he's most known for, two of the plays that he's most known for, is one diving into the stands all the way from short, and the other one being the flip at home to get Jeremy Giambi out at home. I was there for that game. I was in the third deck. And that's the one play that really taught me as a young baseball player, hey, slide when you go home. But that's a different story for another day. Derek Jeter, though, with his statistics from the plate, I mean, he's had 3,465 hits, 260 homers, 1,311 RBIs, 11,195 at-bats, 2,747 games, with a .310 batting average overall. Now, power-wise, obviously, not the greatest of hitters, but still, to have a .310 average after getting up to the plate almost 11,200 times, that's a feat within itself. Now, Larry Walker was way more of a power guy. He had 6,907 at-bats, which is almost 50% of what Derek Jeter had. But he also had 123 more homers. He had 383, the same amount of RBIs, 1,311. And he also had a .313 batting average with a .400 on-base percentage, .565 slugging percentage, and a .965 OPS. And Larry Walker was one of those guys who kind of got lost in the shuffle sometimes when you're looking on those Colorado Rockies teams that weren't all that great. Now, they were at one point when you know, When he started out, when they had a, oh my gosh, who were the other two that were monsters on that Rockies team at the time? I can't even remember the names for the life of me right now. But Larry Walker was one of those guys who you knew about and were scared of. Now, it's just a situation where all these people, all these players that are on the ballot right now, in a sense, deserve to get in. Whether it was Scott Rowland, you knew that when him and Albert Pujols were on the Cardinals, they were a pretty dangerous team. Gary Sheffield, he had one of the, I mean, his batting stance alone deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. Todd Helton, you knew him as just a consistent first baseman on the Rockies also once Larry Walker was departed. Manny Ramirez, I mean, it's Manny. It's Manny. Now, Jeff Kent. Jeff Kent, despite being out here in San Francisco and maybe, you know, not getting along with Barry Bonds and being kind of the them two kind of being polar opposites, he still put up crazy numbers, all-star numbers. Andrew Jones, who at a young age was one of the best to do it, and still remained even after however many seasons that he played, 17 seasons. Still remain one of the better ones to do it. Sammy Sosa, we all know about Sammy Sosa, Andy Pettit, and Bobby Abreu. The other guys were left off the ballot: Paul Konerko, Jason Giambi, Alfonso Soriano, Eric Chavez, and Raul Ibanez, J.J. Putz, and Brad Penny, Cliff Lee. They all got votes too. But the whole notion now, maybe this whole Astros scandal and what's to come with it, I still think there's more to come with the Astros stuff, by the way, or just something to come along with the players. There's got to be – something's got to give with that. But I do think that with all the suspensions and all the cheating and whatnot, in the next couple of years, I do believe the baseball writers are going to look back on it and think, look, even though these guys, a majority of them, were having – healthy, well-balanced breakfasts every morning, even though they were eating their vitamins every morning, even though they were doing that, it still takes skill to try and hit the ball and also to hit it with power. And not only that, but to just look for pitches and have that sort of eye, which is what Barry Bonds had. And I think the most frustrating number on here is, and thank you from the 408, Andres Galarraga and Vinny Castillo on the Rockies with Larry Walker. Thank you so much. And from the 973, Dante Bichette. Oh my gosh. The big cat Galarraga. Now I'll tell you something. If you have any free time when football season's over, right, and you're kind of in a lull in your sports, you may be looking forward to basketball tonight, going to be the debut of Zion. That might be something to pay attention to. You pay attention to the Warrior season. You might love a little bit of hockey for yourself, and you might just be waiting for the baseball season. But if you're only waiting for the baseball season and that's it, highly recommend just going on Baseball Reference and looking up the rosters of these teams in the early 2000s to the late 90s. It may sound like a loser thing, but that's how I would spend happily my Friday night, is just looking on my laptop, watching some sort of game on TV in the background, and also looking at rosters from the late 90s to the early 2000s. It's pretty entertaining. And also looking at the home run numbers for them, because that's also something where you're like, huh, they really were eating well-balanced breakfast at the time. But this whole notion that Barry Bonds doesn't deserve to be in the Hall of Fame statistically alone, there's a few numbers that really pop out to me more than any other. But for one, I mean, a lot of these guys, at least at the top, they might have 9,000 to 10,000 to 11,000 at-bats. Barry Bonds had 9,847. And the statistics he was putting up were way higher. 1,996 RBIs. No one's even close to that except for Manny Ramirez, who's at 1,831. But obviously you know him as the home run king with 762. But the other number that stands out to me, and this doesn't require a well-balanced breakfast, 2,558 walks. Now, looking down at the list, no one has more than 1,500. So he has at least over 1,000 more walks than the next guy up. And that sort of thing doesn't take the vitamins. That sort of thing takes skill. And the other number that's up here is the Bill James Hall of Fame monitor, quote unquote. And Bill James is known as the godfather of metrics. Sabermetrics, the godfather of sabermetrics in baseball, and his Hall of Fame monitor, quote unquote, it attempts to determine how likely a player is to be elected. It is a rough scale with over 100 likely and under 100 less likely. So over 100, pretty likely to get in. Under 100, not likely to get in. Derek Jeter, he's at a 337. Larry Walker at a 148. So those guys likely to get in because of this number. But Barry Bonds was at a 340. A 340 in that number. And Derek Jeter was at a 337. And Derek Jeter was almost unanimously voted in. So he has the numbers to back it up. It's just a matter of time. You got two more years left. He'll be on his ninth year on the ballot next season. And if he's not in within the next 2 years, then we understand, like, there's got to be something else we could do. There's something we could do, right? Probably not. But look, it's just, we all know that if in the next couple of years, if Barry Bonds doesn't get into the Hall of Fame, then he's going to be the guy that's known as probably the biggest snub. One of the ones we look at right now, Pete Rose. But Barry Bonds would take that mantle, I think, if he's not voted in the next couple of years. Okay. Chilton Auto Body text line 95795 888-957-9570 if you want to get in on the conversation. So I got a couple of stats for you about Patrick Mahomes and about Jimmy Garoppolo. And I want to know from you, I want you to answer this question. I want to know, in this Chiefs 49ers Super Bowl, if you're the 49ers and you're a 49er fan, would you rather be at halftime up 10 or down by 10? So the halftime score, would you rather be up by 10 or down by 10 if you're a 49er fan? Chilton Auto Body text line 95795. I'll explain that next. Stephen Langford in on the pregame show, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to the pregame show on 95.7 The Game. Here's Stephen Langford.
The pregame show is presented by Golden State Lumber. Three generations, 65 years of experience, and seven Bay Area locations give us the winning edge. When you succeed, we succeed. GoldenStateLumber.com. Now, I want to get to my stupid, dumb question in a little bit, but also there was some sound that I wanted to get to from yesterday, and this was from Nick Wright on First Things First. And I do agree with a part of what he said, but at the beginning, this is where he's just kind of out of line.
I think everyone would agree. Mahomes versus Garoppolo is the biggest mismatch on the field this week. I know they won't be on the field at the same time. Mm-hmm. Steve Young versus Stan Humphries. Team with a better quarterback won. Troy Aikman against Neil O'Donnell. Better quarterback. John Elway against Chris Chandler. Tom Brady against Jake Delhomme. Remember that Super Bowl back in 03? Peyton Manning against Rex Grossman. The only time in the last quarter century we've had this type of quarterback mismatch and the inferior quarterback won was Nick Foles over Tom Brady. There isn't a lot of precedent for the Niners saying we are going to try to just have our quarterback be a supporting character and them being able to win. There's a lot of precedent for teams going into the Super Bowl saying that's our plan. I think for the Niners to beat the Chiefs, they don't need Garoppolo to outplay Patrick Mahomes, but they need Garoppolo to play far better than we've seen him play in this postseason, obviously. And they need him to at least give them a B-plus level performance. I didn't think the Titans could hold the Chiefs under 35. I don't think the Niners can hold them under 28. So how do you get around 30 points for San Francisco? If the Chiefs aren't turning the ball over a bunch like Green Bay, then you're going to have to do more through the air than they were able to do in the conference championship game.
Now, I agree with that second half of that statement, him saying that Garoppolo, he's going to have to play a little bit better than he's played in the playoffs. In the last game against the Packers, really didn't have to do much. In the first game against the Vikings, really didn't have to do much. But I do think Garoppolo is going to be expected to do more in this game because the Chiefs, they're going to score right out of the gate. But when it comes to Jimmy Garoppolo, though, and him playing from behind, that's actually when he's at his best. He has just over a 110 passer rating whenever he's trailing or tied. A 119.4 and a 118 to be exact. And that's when he's trailing late. So Jimmy Garoppolo and his numbers also after the interception, we all know about that. He's 36 for 39 for a few hundred yards and a couple of touchdowns. But Jimmy Garoppolo, to me, he does just as well when he's playing from behind. And I understand what you're saying with the whole and the question I threw out, and this may be pretty dumb and it may be stupid, but I do wonder though, is there any part of you, anybody, with knowing how the Niners play when they're down, knowing how resilient they are there any one of you that would rather them be down 10 at halftime rather than be up 10? Because, and bear with me now, in the second half for the Chiefs, they haven't allowed anything yet. They haven't allowed a single type of score. They haven't allowed, they've only allowed punts, and they've only turned the ball, they've only allowed turnovers. They haven't allowed any sort of score in the second half. And for me, when I'm looking at Patrick Mahomes, in the second quarter, this man is just about as lethal as anyone else can be in the second quarter, especially in the playoffs. Right now, he's thrown for 209 yards with five touchdowns in the second quarter. Now, granted, in the first game against the Texans, you could attribute that to good field position as well as a fumble forced by the Chiefs defense. And that's why they were able to score so quick. But in the end, he still has five touchdowns in the second quarter. And the Chiefs defense has only allowed two touchdowns in the total in the second, third, and fourth quarter so far. The 49ers defense hasn't allowed any points in the second quarter. And the only time they really did was because they were lackadaisical. The only time they really allowed scoring was when they were lackadaisical against the Packers, and that was in the third. So I'm wondering just where we're at now with how we feel about halftime. Look, from the 925, give the Niners defense some credit. From the 714, I think you'd rather be up. If they're up, they're playing with their game. You don't want this to be a shootout. I mean, look, here's the thing, though, is the Chiefs defense, their run defense, I know they're bottom third in the regular season, but toward the latter half of that, they really weren't all that bad, and their pass defense is top 10. Now, I'm just saying that sometimes, like, you can look at this and think, man, Mahomes, he can do all he wants in the second quarter, but in the third and fourth, he hasn't been as lethal with his arm. It's all done within the second and third quarter. I think the 49ers, I think they can get this game done in the fourth quarter when Jimmy Garoppolo feels like he needs to put the game on his back, and I think he can do that. But also, I mean, I could see the run game just totally dominating. There could be a situation with that. There's no reason for that to get for them to give me any doubt. But also, I'm just saying, if I'm in the fourth quarter and I'm down at the Chiefs from the Chiefs in the fourth quarter, I don't know. I wouldn't be looking at that. I wouldn't be looking at that and thinking we're totally out of it just yet. From the 408, defense wins championships. Our defense is way better. We're going to run the ball down their throat. From the 510, I'm not a Niner fan, but I think there's more of a chance that the Niners win a close game in Kansas City, blowing out the 49ers instead of the Madden curse. I believe that curse will go full-blown, and I believe in superstition, and Mahomes' injury early was just, wow. I mean, you are just sending in a ton here. And from the 925, give the Niners defense some credit. Look, I've given them as much credit as I could possibly give them on this program, okay? I've mentioned them as being one of the best ever. But also, Patrick Mahomes right now, it doesn't look like there's a single defense that can stop whatever he's doing. And the weapons that he has in Tyreek Hill, Sammy Watkins, and Travis Kelce, I think that Mahomes, when he sees pressure, he's very good at evading it. He's very good at throwing on the run. As a matter of fact, he's one of the best in football, if not the best in football, in throwing on the run. So I think that there is going to be a chance that you're going to see some scoring here, and that you could see the Chiefs offense, they could try and tire them out a little bit. And I think that's what Andy Reid's game plan is going to be. One of the reasons this 49er defense is so lethal is because they can go they can make you go three and out so quick, and the offense is really good at keeping the ball on the field and keeping the defense off the field, keeping them fresh. But I think the Chiefs can do something. Andy Reid's going to draw something up to where he's just going to be throwing little slants with Tyreek Hill. You know, Damian Williams is coming into his own, going to use Damian Williams in certain ways. Joe Thomas was putting this perfectly on Twitter, and he said that teams and coaches, they can be primarily run pass, run pass, run pass. And coaches can think in their head, oh, we've ran too much, it's time to pass. Oh, we've passed the ball too much, you know what, it's time to run it. We should run it to make up for all of that. He said that there are coaches that do that. But when it comes to Kyle Shanahan, as well as Andy Reid, I mean, they both have a system in place. They don't run and pass whenever they just feel like they need to make up for it because they don't feel like they've ran the ball enough in the game. They run when it's needed. And that's what Kyle Shanahan does, and that's the system that he's created for this entire season, is he runs whenever he feels like it's appropriate. And in these last two games, they were dominating in the trenches, so he felt like he could use the run game to his advantage. Some games he's just used primarily Jimmy Garoppolo. I mean, let's look at the Saints game, for instance, when the Saints were scoring right off the bat in five straight possessions. He knew that he couldn't go to the run game right away. He had to use Jimmy Garoppolo, and he could. But it's also kind of the same way with the Chiefs, although I do see this being a very pass-heavy game for the Chiefs, and that's how they're going to move the ball down the field, whether it be with little bit of screen passes, little slants to Sammy Watkins, using Mecole Hardman out of the backfield too, and then you got Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill to get you first downs whenever they're in second and long, first and long. First and long when they got stupid penalties on them, like a holding or something like that. That's when they use Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill to their advantage. All these things that I'm talking about on the Chiefs offense, the Niner defense could counter, and that's why it makes it such a great Super Bowl, and I'm kind of just like all over the place right now. But in the end, the Chiefs offense has a lot of ways in which they can beat you, and I think that I'm hearing a lot of, well, this Chiefs offense hasn't seen a defense like the 49ers. And to me, this 49er defense hasn't seen an offense like the Chiefs offense. They've seen the Saints, sure. They've seen the Ravens, sure. I actually think the Chiefs, believe it or not, are going to try and use that L.A. Rams template from week 16 in the season. I think they're going to have Mahomes just sprint straight out of the pocket every time, like Jared Goff, use the play action. Even though they don't use play action all that much, they're going to have him also out the shotgun and have him just roll out and try and get someone open in the middle of the field and try and confuse the secondary and not let the pass rush get to him. So that's what I think the Chiefs offense is going to do. Is that going to be sustainable for the entire game? I don't know. But also, you just got to realize that this Chiefs offense can score some points. And they're back to their ways that they were in the beginning of the season before Patrick Mahomes got hurt. Stephen Langford in on the pregame show. Chilton Autobody text line 957-95-888-957-9570. Hit me up. I want to know from you a couple of things. One, just would love to get your thoughts on Barry Bonds not making the Hall of Fame. Want to know if you maybe are watching Zion tonight, if that's any draw to you as an NBA fan. There's a lot that we can go over today. It's Chilton Autobody text line 95795. Stephen Langford on the pregame show, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to the pregame show on 95.7 The Game. Here's Stephen Langford.
The pregame show on 95.7 The Game is presented by Golden State Lumber. With locations across the Bay Area, we offer next day delivery. Now that's a winning game plan. GoldenStateLumber.com. From the Chilton Autobody text line at 95795. I mean, there's a lot that are coming in this morning here. Thank you so much. From the 973, let's not act like their D is great all of a sudden. And I'm talking about Kansas City. Kansas City finished the regular season with these teams, LA twice, Denver twice, the Bears, the Pats, then the one-dimensional offenses, the Texans, and a Titans team with no quarterback. And that's kind of why I think, man, my voice just cracked there so bad. Suffering from a sore throat here, but I'm pulling through it. That's why, though, I see with Jimmy Garoppolo that this game, and why I agree with Nick Wright from First Things First when he talks about how I don't think that this is the biggest mismatch in this game, if there had to be one. Patrick Mahomes versus Jimmy Garoppolo. I understand Patrick Mahomes is that good, but to say that it's the biggest mismatch is such a disrespect to what Jimmy Garoppolo has done. I mean, he's tied for fifth in touchdowns with 27. He's tied for fifth in completion percentage. Like, what more do you really want from him? And he's only had 13 interceptions. And the guys that he tried comparing him to were Rex Grossman and Chris Chandler and Neil O'Donnell. And if you look at any of those guys' numbers, those guys, Jake Delhomme from the Panthers when he was going up against Tom Brady and the Patriots, if you look at any of those guys' numbers, those guys barely, if ever, eclipsed 65% in their career and barely threw for 25 touchdowns in their career. So, at least in a season. in their career. So to say that this is the biggest mismatch compared to those guys is such a disrespect on Jimmy Garoppolo. But when he says that Garoppolo is going to have to do a little more in this game than he's had to do in the past couple, well, for one, I mean, you just got to throw, like, what, 10 passes, and you'll probably do more than he's done the past couple of games. But also, I do think that this Chiefs run defense can at least limit the 49ers run game. The 49ers are going to they're going to run the ball, and they're going to do it pretty well. But also, the Chiefs, they just held Derrick Henry to 79 yards when any other team couldn't stop him in the past five games. You got to look at the past few games for Tennessee. In the last five, he had over 100 yards rushing in the last five regular season games, then in the last two postseason games, and then couldn't get it done against the Chiefs. And you could blame that on being tired, and you can blame that on it just being an Arrowhead. You can blame that on just being at a disadvantageous spot. But also, I don't think we can take anything away from that Chiefs defense stopping Derrick Henry for under 100 yards rushing, which is not very easy to do. So there's a lot of factors that go into this game. I really think that this is the prime matchup. This is the one that you want if you had to choose two teams. The Ravens would be up there also, but the Ravens clearly couldn't get it done in the playoffs. So and the Chiefs have done it. And the Chiefs' offense has looked like they've looked before Mahomes got injured. So on both sides, just a illuminating Chiefs offense with a devastating 49er defense. There's a lot that's going to go into it. Okay, Kyle Juszczyk, 49er fullback. He was on with Jolo and Dibs yesterday. He will be our interview of the day, and it's actually pretty cool hearing him talk about the confidence in that run game that Kyle Shanahan possesses and deploys for this team. So here's Kyle Juszczyk, our interview of the day on the pregame show. He was from yesterday at about 9 o'clock in the morning.
We go to the phones. He's headed to the Super Bowl. Four-time Pro Bowl selection as a fullback. San Francisco 49er, Kyle Juszczyk with Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Kyle, first and foremost, congratulations on the NFC Championship, man. How's it feel?
Oh, thanks, man. Thanks for having me on. Feels phenomenal. You know, this is what you work for, is to play in this game. So just super excited to start getting to work on these Chiefs.
Kyle, let everyone know, once all during the week, you know, you're getting ready and being a fullback, the mindset. How do you get prepared knowing that you come to do two things, chew bubble gum and kick ass, and on Sunday, usually fresh out of bubble gum? What do you do to get that mind that set that way, baby? Talk to me, Cal. Talk to me.
Man, I like that. Man, you just got to know that come Sunday, you got to be ready to give your body up. You know it's going to be physical. And you got to be ready to impose your will on somebody. So you spend the week really getting your body ready, studying up on these guys so that you can anticipate what they're going to do. But, man, once that ball gets kicked off, you know that it's time to give your body up and do whatever it takes to get that win.
You look at the game plans against Minnesota and Green Bay and the execution with such a ground-heavy approach, and Jimmy Garoppolo really doing a great job of navigating the offense. What's it like for you and the big guys up front and the receivers and the tight ends, knowing you're going to run the ball and knowing that you're likely going to dominate?
Man, it's just motivating. When you get that success early on running the ball, everybody feels that energy. You feed off of it. And when you can just continue to do it as the game goes on, the defense wears down and you just build more and more confidence. And I think Kyle feeds off that as well. He sees that in us. You know, he sees us in the huddle, jacked up, pushing each other around. And so when you can just continue to go to that, it makes it really tough for a defense to take on such an inspired offense and guys that want to be physical, guys that want to, you know, go down there and get nasty and hit you.
Kyle Juszczyk joining us here on 95.7 The Game. We've been having the question all morning. We're going to begin a lot of our preparation for the Super Bowl and the matchup with Kansas City in the next few days, but we've been looking back on an unbelievable season, and we've been highlighting some of our favorite plays. We've got two at the top of the list, and then we're asking everyone for what they like outside of that. But I got to ask you, which of the two is the biggest play of the year for the 49ers? George Kittle's rumble down the sideline against New Orleans or Dre Greenlaw's stop in Seattle?
Oh, man. Two legendary plays there.
Don't give me any of that Harvard 1-2. You're going to have to answer the question.
Two season-defining plays there. You know what? I'm an offensive guy, though, and I can't lie. When you started talking about the biggest play of the season, the first play that jumped to my mind was Georgia's play in New Orleans. So I got to give it. I'm going to give that one to George, with Dre as a close second. But both just two guys putting the team on their back and just willing, the team to win. So both absolutely phenomenal plays.
Appreciate that, Ant. That's a real answer right there, too. No dancing around that one. Thank you, Kyle. Very well done.
Hey, Kyle, what's the week like? I mean, you know, unfortunately, we didn't have this extra week, and the phone's blowing up. Coaches want you guys to take care of the tickets and all those different things ahead of time. What's it like? What's the message to the team and about getting things done this week? Because next week, you know, you're fresh out of bubble gum, right?
Right. Right. You know, this is a new experience for me. So, you know, this is my first Super Bowl. So I'm taking it one day at a time here. But Kyle's basically just stressed to us, you know, taking care of all the tickets, the hotels, the family, all that kind of stuff right now, early in this week, because we don't want to get down to Miami and be worrying about that. When we get to Miami, we want to be worrying about Kansas City.
Right.
We want to be worrying about ourselves, getting ready for the game. So we're taking care of that now early in the week. And then I think it's kind of cool. Kyle has set up, it's really a normal work week for us. Like today is our off day, body regen day. And then we're going to come in Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and have a normal week. Then we'll have Saturday off, travel on Sunday. And it just kind of keeps you in that routine. You know, things don't get all mixed up. You know, now that it's the Super Bowl, you're getting out of your routine. It's nice to do what we've been doing every week.
Tell our listeners about Raheem Mostert. Seven teams. He comes in and scores four touchdowns in the NFC Championship game. What has he meant to the team, and how important is it for all of you on the offense to see a guy who's had such a tough journey come in and be so successful?
Yeah, what's so awesome about Raheem is he's the first one to pass the credit on to other people, and everybody's so happy to see him succeed because we've seen the work that he's put in. We all know the journey that he's been through, and we all recognize that he's had potential this whole time. We've all seen it, but he just needed an opportunity, and he needed somebody to believe in him, and I think he's got, he's got that in Kyle, somebody that believes in him, and he's given him that opportunity, and he's quite literally ran away with it. So we're just so happy to see him go out there and dominate, and no one deserves it more than Raheem.
Kyle Juszczyk with us here on 95.7 The Game. So take me through it. First thought, you guys wrap up business against the Packers. There's some celebrating. There's some brilliant, wonderful moments, and then the mindset eventually turns to the Chiefs. What do you think about Kansas City?
Yeah, I think it's important to enjoy that moment. We definitely did. We enjoyed that night. But first look to Kansas City, you know, you see an extremely good, talented football team. We're going to have our hands full. Patrick Mahomes, arguably one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. Their defense started playing very well towards the second half of the season. So we know we're going to, like I said, have our hands full. We're going to dive into it a lot more tomorrow. So I'd be able to give you a little more detailed answer tomorrow, but excited for the matchup.
So am I. I can't wait to see you guys. You can't get along. You might as well get it on. Hughie, when you're looking at this team, and especially talking about just running back, being kind of the elder statement in the room and seeing the different dynamics of those guys, I know you're telling those guys, get on your hip and don't dip and follow, you're going to take them to the promised land. How do you keep those guys pushing when you see a guy like, you know, Breida the Cheetah struggling mentally? How do you do that? I know Jimmy Ray loved that guy. He zip pop hit it. How do you keep yourself focused, but also knowing that, hey, you got to make sure these guys are ready to go and play at the level that they're all capable of?
First off, you are just on it with the one-liners today. You're killing it.
Because I'm fired up. I got you on the phone, brother.
It's nice in small doses.
I love it. But, man, with our running back room, it's pretty easy with these guys. I really don't have to say too much. It's just a few reminders here and there. But they can look back to the season and what they've done throughout the year. Each and every one of those guys is had their moment and been the reason that we've won a football game. They're all extremely talented, very hardworking. So it doesn't take too much for me to really get on them. I think that, you know, they're going to come ready to go, and they can just fall back on what they've already done.
Where does the selflessness come from with this offense? You have a quarterback who threw it 8 times. You had your midseason acquisition, Emmanuel Sanders, with 0 catches, yet there never seems to be any me first in that locker room.
Yeah. I think it comes from Kyle. You know, I think we're an image of our head coach, of our leader. That's just kind of the way that he's put this team together. He didn't pick guys that come in with an ego and are me first guys. He found guys that are happy to see their teammates succeed and do whatever is asked of them. And I just think, as one guy has had success, they've always passed it along, and that's just kind of become the trend. You know, you see another guy do it, and you're like, man, when I have that success, I'm not going to just gloat about it and be a me guy. I saw the way, you know, Jimmy has handled it, George has handled it, Raheem has handled it. When it's my opportunity, I'm going to do the same thing they did.
Kyle Juszczyk with us here on 95.7 The Game. Final question for you. Can you tell us the genesis, the beginning of the idea where the T-shirt came from that Kittle was wearing after the game, the white T-shirt with the shirtless Garoppolo autographed for George Kittle?
You guys know more than I do. I don't know what those two are up to, man.
Thanks.
They're up to no good. That's all I know.
Beautiful stuff. Well, listen, we appreciate your time. We know you're busy. Thank you so much for jumping on. And more importantly, congratulations on all the success this season. And best of luck in Miami. We're all pulling for you.
Man, thanks, guys. Always great talking with all of you.
It's crazy when you hear guys like Kyle Juszczyk and, you know, Kendrick Bourne when he comes on, Richard Sherman when he's been on the station before, and even Richard Sherman after the game. When you talk about how Lynch and Shanahan have built this team, and I'm gonna find this clip here from Sherman, but he's talking about how they chose their guys, like they had a plan, and you always hear it every single time where they're talking about how, look, despite, you know, all the hate and all the sort of just doubt about the team and some thinking that, you know, other teams are more talented than others, one thing that gets lost in all of it is chemistry. And that's at least what the 49ers do have. And I found those comments from Richard Sherman, and he talked about that, just about how Shanahan, Robert Saleh, John Lynch, they all had an idea and a plan in place and people and guys in mind.
Well, it's just Kyle and Saleh. They designed this thing perfect. People sit there and say, oh, well, you don't have a great back. We have a stable of great backs. You don't have a great receiver. We have 5 great receivers. You know what I mean? We have great tight end play. It's about people fitting your system, fitting what you do. And I think that's sometimes where people get confused. They're like, oh, my God, these guys have all pros here and all pros there. That's for the media. You know what I mean? If you could pick the perfect people for what Kyle does, you'd pick the guys we got. And that's over just about anybody in the league. And you can see why. Raheem freaking still playing special teams and ran for 200 in an NFC championship. There's a ton of elite backs that have come through this league and played in big games. And I can't remember a back going for that much. And he's unheralded, but he's perfect for the scheme. He's perfectly built and designed to do what Kyle needs him to do. You know, in another scheme, he may not be effective. He may be a regular Joe, but in this, he's one of the best backs in this league. And that's what you can appreciate, that guy, Kyle and John and Saleh and Hightower, they picked the guys that they wanted specific. They're very specific about their wants and needs. Deebo Samuel, could he do what he's doing in this offense and another offense? Who knows? But that's why Kyle picked him. He knew what he was looking for. He knew what he wanted him to do. And he's thriving.
And despite, now to think about this, Kyle Shanahan and Robert Saleh have done this with guys who don't have much on their record. Well, Andy Reid's done the same thing. He's put guys on his team who fit his scheme. That's why Sammy Watkins is able to have a bounce back year. That's why Tyreek Hill, well, he could be successful probably anywhere if you have a quarterback with an arm. But guys like Mecole Hardman, Darwin Thompson, these backup younger guys, they all fit his scheme perfectly. And despite Andy Reid sacrificing some of his integrity, to have these guys on his team. They're the type of guys who do fit Andy Reid's system. That's another thing that makes this 49ers Chiefs Super Bowl so enthralling. It's that these two coaches, they even though they're a little different because Andy Reid's a little older and has had much more experience, Kyle Shanahan and Andy Reid, though, have done sort of the same thing with their teams as they both head on to
Miami.
Very close. Very close. About 12 days away, if I'm not mistaken. From the 925 on the Chilton Auto Body text line, feel free to chime in. The Chiefs loaded the box against the Titans a lot. I wouldn't load the box against the Niners offense as often. And you did see that, and you saw Derrick Henry at one point was just tired, and that's partially why the Chiefs stopped them. But also, Ryan Tannehill just didn't make any of the throws. And that's where I agree with Nick Wright when he talks about how Jimmy G has to have he's going to be relied on a lot more. And that's what I think he's trying to say when he's saying he needs to have a much better game, because Garoppolo hasn't played poorly. He just hasn't really had to play that much. It's just been a lot of rely on the run game. Run every single down and run it down their throat. That drive in the Vikings game in the third quarter, still one of the craziest drives of the year, just because they ran it all the way into the end zone, and Kittle just kept on saying,
"Run it again! Run it again!"
So they kept on running it. But with Nick Wright, though, he mentioned at the beginning, he's comparing him to all these quarterbacks. Don't agree with him on that. But I do think at the end, he's trying to say that Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be expected to do more, and he has to succeed with that. He's not going to have to outplay Patrick Mahomes, because Jimmy Garoppolo isn't going to be throwing the ball 50 plus times like Mahomes is going to be doing. So I see there is a sense of truth in what Nick Wright is saying. And if they do load the box, then that's going to call for play action. The Titans couldn't execute that. What are the 49ers good at doing? Executing the play action. It's also going to be a thing at the beginning. They're probably going to load the box at the beginning of the game, and it's up to the defense to get stops early and not let the Chiefs get on the board. Now, they have a minus 30 point differential in the first quarter, the Chiefs do, so they've been proven that other teams can beat them in the first quarter, and really it's the second quarter where it goes down, but that's where it could be a shootout, depending on how the Chiefs defense stops them or tries to stop the run in the first quarter and how they use the play action to their advantage. So there's a lot of factors going in to this game. For the 415, remember the Seahawks versus Broncos Super Bowl? Best defense in the league versus best offense in the league. Seahawks defense straight embarrassed Peyton and the Broncos. If the Niners defense is on point, they will win. That's from Sandman the Butcher. I'm going to be 100% honest with you. I was a little inebriated in that game because I was in college when that game was going on, and I just remember watching the TV for a bit and then getting distracted and seeing that the Seahawks are up by 20. And I remember, and that was a situation in college where it's tough for me to pay attention to that game. Pretty tough. But yeah, I do remember that. And from the 415, we have Kittle. He's going to be our X Factor. He's going to be ready to catch the pass when he's needed. It's crazy that you haven't needed to use Kittle that much overall in this postseason, unless it's for run blocking, which is something that he enjoys doing. Woo! From the 925, the Chiefs defense has been suspect all year. How much do you think this extra week will help them? These extra weeks are a little different. You know, it's so, because you already see right now, Andy Reid and Kyle Shanahan are both getting their game plans ready as we speak. And they're going to travel to Miami on the weekend. And when they get to Miami, it's a different game plan but it's a different atmosphere in general, because they're being covered by the media. They got to be at Radio Row. They got to do all these different things to get ready for the Super Bowl. So this week is totally different than, say, if you had a bye week during the regular season. And I don't think this is a situation where either team is going to go out and you know, they might have one night where they go out and party a little bit. But other than that, I really do think these two teams are going to be so focused on winning. I think both teams have that much of an advantage as far as the bye week is concerned, or at least the off week is concerned. So that remains to be seen, too. But look, the Chiefs defense, they have been suspect all year, but they haven't been terrible in the playoffs. And that's the only thing that really I could think about or can mention right now. From the 5-1-0, the Seahawks defense was way better and probably more historic down the line. And from the 9-1-2, you can't compare this to that Denver game. Manning isn't mobile. Manning and Mahomes are not the same QB, and that is a fact for sure. From the 7-1-4, it's funny. 7-1-4, it's funny people think their defense has been suspect. That's the third best down defense in the NFL. Remember that. And they're also, as far as stats, they are top 10 in pass defense, too, in interceptions and all that sort of stuff. So I think we can overlook the defense at times, but we can't overlook that offense, that's for sure. Willie Rofe at 8 o'clock with Jolo and Dibs. Jeff Garcia at 8:30. Ian Williams at 9:05. Thanks for joining me, everyone. And Barry Bonds should be in the Hall of Fame in the next 2 years. Thanks for joining me.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.